Hello, everybody. This is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you to my home. It is a brisk evening tonight with a half moon. I don't know what the explicit thing, does that even have a name? I know there's like crescents and gibbouses. Is it just a half moon? I don't know. But I rarely look up at the sky like that, but sometimes I do look up and I notice the moon. That's been one of those things throughout my life. But anyhows, tonight's going to be a very free-form experience. I have literally zero notes, and I have done no thinking for this. It's been a hellish week, to be honest, and maybe I can blend some real-world travesties into a more compelling image that could be more useful. But my son has continued to struggle in school. Over the past week and a half, he's been suspended 4 times. Like, he's literally been in class for like 1 day, and it's very stressful. But I have a lot of help, and my mother and my sister have done immense leaps and bounds to help me get my son to school and to watch him through his suspensions. And I am so grateful, and I need to show it more. I need to show much more, I don't know what, like, just more examples of my gratefulness, because I haven't been a very shiny individual to be around lately. I started a new job at a local diner, and it's pretty awesome. I do miss the daycare, but doing all of that work for not enough pay to survive on. I mean, I was able to survive on it for quite a while, but with my new living situation switching, it wasn't cutting it. And the amount of work I did for that company is insane for how little they paid me, you know, because I went up substantially in pay and I have significantly less duties now. It's so nice just being a standard line cook and working with regular line people and not having to worry about my language. And, you know, I've noticed that I have become very kid-proof. I don't even know how to joke around jocularly with people. Like, there's a way of discourse that I'm not used to because I've been working by myself for so long. You know, and I'm kind of lame. I don't know. I have my place in my speech, but I'm not a very funny person. I guess a lot of my friends would say that I kill jokes with my denseness, and I explain them away. I had a really good friend of mine once told me that I'm allergic to mediocrity. And what it makes something mediocre, I'm not sure. But if it's not a very complex thing you give me, I'm going to overcomplicate it. But that's been very trying, and I haven't acted well or reacted well lately. So I guess tonight is, I want to go into some strategies that I've been thinking about. And even though I'm not able to implement a lot of my healthy habits and structures that I had put into my life for such a long time, and now everything is so different. I haven't meditated in several days, and that's something that I really need to do. I mean, I woke up the other morning. I got up a little bit earlier to try to meditate, and then life hit, and I don't even know what happened. And I don't have my long breaks anymore. I work all day, which is cool. It's honestly, it's better. It's a lot better. You know, I should use my 10 minutes to go sit out and get a 10-minute meditation when I'm healthy. But this made me start to think about comfort and comfort's role in this idea that we have labeled as happiness. What even is happiness? Like, really? I'm not sure it ever was a thing. And if anything, it might have just been a figment of my imagination, maybe the collective imagination of humankind. And I'm not sure. So let's backtrack a little bit. One of the things that I was considering was that right before this trying time came was a time of immense peace for me. And towards the end of that cycle, because life is just nothing but cycles. Life is ups and downs, gives and tugs. And with the good comes the bad, and with the benefit becomes the detriment. And when I was at the end of this comfortable cycle, I was at a point where I had a particular awareness that I was not generally aware, conscious of prior, where I was looking at it and I was like, wow, I'm really comfortable. And there was this sense of dread that came. And it wasn't like a depression. It was an accepting dread where I knew that this trying time was going to come, because the Tao and every other philosophy that I've delved into says that, or at least it has spoken to me, and always one of the most biggest thing is that things come down. When they go up, they go down. They go up, they go down. Just like waves and troughs. And there's no way anything could be that good for that long unless it's completely artificial. And I'm not a wealthy person, so nothing's artificial. Everything I have is created by choice and by the attitude I put towards things, which is why my life turns into hell very quickly, because I can make it hell. But not to get sidetracked again. So during an immense point of comfort, you know, I was meditating close to 2 hours a day, and I was fasting, which is really uncomfortable. And honestly, a lot of my waking energy was geared towards considering how I could add little bits of struggle. You know, that's what fasting was. It was a test. You know, I'm so comfortable right now, I might as well take a little bit of it away so that I don't get weak. Like muscle training, if you stop lifting your arms or whatever you're admiring or trying to achieve, is going to reduce or at least not gain towards what you were going for. So this is what I was doing, and I was conscious of it, and I felt that dread. But honestly, I also knew why I needed to have artificial struggles. And now that my life is nothing but struggle, you know, it's hard. It's really hard to implement all these strategies that I thought were my way at the moment. You know, in those moments, I would have said that I was healthy and good because of these activities. And now I disagree. I would say that I was able to do those activities because I was healthy and good. And that was a prerequisite. And it's not like that comes with the tides of goodness and badness, and whether things are good or bad in the first place. And subjectively, that was a time period of leniency and comfort, you know. And of course, there was value in that space because I was able to start creating like I have. I've planted so many seeds of creation, and I keep trying to get, you know, you and everybody else I speak to in real life and on the internet to create more, because during this time of struggle, I also found that now that I have the seeds and I know that I can create, you know, I've been creating a lot more too. You know, I've been doing a lot of drawing still because, you know, everything hurts sometimes. And I wonder if you're in a similar situation, because I'm not trying to be depressing, you know, and I'm not depressed. You know, I'm biting. I'm okay. You know, we're in a good space and I haven't hurt myself too bad, or anybody else for that matter. You know, so I'm not trying to depress you, but I can't help but feeling that I'm not the only one out there, and that every single person feels that tension that I feel, that I'm trying to describe, you know, like life hurts sometimes. It's really difficult to pursue and to get past a lot of these challenges. And I want you to know that you're not alone. And I don't think I'm alone. And I want you to know that it's completely normal. At least I keep telling myself, and from what I see and I read, not that I can give any advice, struggle is inherent in this life. And it really comes down to what we do with it. So now that I'm in this space where things are a lot more difficult, I can't implement all these artificial struggles because I have an endless supply. Like, imagine that struggle and difficulty is like a medicine, like a bitter medicine that we have to take. Like, you know, like the shitty cough syrup and Mary Poppins, you know, a tea cup of sugar, blah, 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 copyright makes the blah, 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 something go down. But like, I do feel like it's a potent medicine and that I'm going to be stronger for this. And when I get into a space of leniency where it'll be a lot easier for me to create again, I'm going to take advantage and I'm going to try not to take it for granted as much as I did during this space that I had. And when I get there, I'm going to be stronger. And it's not that it's a good place, but I'm going to take advantage of all that comfort to expand what artificial struggles that I can stretch with in order to grow myself. And I do think that at the end of the day, this will be a benefit more to me as long as I don't leave permanent scars. So I drew this interesting picture with water. It wasn't watercolor. I just bought watercolor. I bought a bunch of new stuff, actually. I just bought a bunch of charcoal products. I need like one or two things. I got these things called tortellinos. Butcher me if you're an art person. But tortellinos are rolled up paper, basically, and the rolled up paper can be used to smudge and to get like really good, it's used for blending so that you can get those really nice Van Gogh-y sort of shit that I'm always going for, to be honest, because I like pastels. I use it on pastels. But you could use it with charcoal and you could use it with pencils and colored pencils and sketch, just not ink. I got a bunch of painting pens, like painting markers and stuff like that. Anyways, I completely lost track of what I was talking about. Oh, geez. Anyway, so I was drawing. And I had, I drew a pretty good anatomical heart. And then, I'm patting myself on the back because I felt like it was good. It's not anything too impressive. But, so I drew my anatomical heart. And then I put like some like little cuts on it. And out of the cuts are crawling these snakes. And there's like a snake hovering above it, so you can see that the snake is out of the heart at this point. And then there's one that's coming out of the heart, and then they're all swirling around the heart, you know? And then at the bottom of it, the heart's leaking the blood onto this like triangle pyramid-y sort of structure. And then behind it is just really bright yellow, whereas the heart's red. It's all kind of gory. All the snakes are kind of like blacks and blues and purples. And then right behind all of the stuff is just a really bright yellow background. And it came out of me in a moment where I was able to meditate and able to sit down with myself last weekend, a couple days ago. And it was a good moment. I sat for probably almost an hour and it was really nice. My dad took Odin away for a little bit and I was able to get a little bit of peace. And one of the thoughts that came to me was I realized, well, not to digress again. So I don't know if I mentioned the lady from Pakistan that I met at my son's jiu-jitsu place. But one of the things she said was that I was holding back my what do you call it? I was suppressing my anger instead of working through it. So in the space of meditation, what I envisioned was all these negative thought patterns coming, because I've been literally waking up just into fear, you know, waking up into a very intense state of misery where I've had to like go take a hot shower and try to like talk myself into existence every morning for a little bit, you know? And so I was aware that when I was meditating, what I was trying to do is get away from that, was to find some relief and to find a space of quiet that wasn't filled with all that toxicity. And I was getting some spaces, but in between the spaces become a flash of like thought about this week that I'm living right now. And this week wasn't as bad as anything that I envisioned, to be honest. But all those negative thought patterns that were coming up, I started to envision as snakes, like crawling out of all these wounds that I've added by attaching myself and allowing to progress a lot of these really nasty intentions and within me that weren't helpful and that weren't producing anything except for not very good stuff. But so the snakes are crawling out of the holes that I've cut, and as they come out, they continue to float around my subconscious and poison my existence, but they're all made from me, from, you know, anyways. And so the blood's dripping from the heart onto the temple, and the temple represents like my observing self that is paramount and concrete and isn't going anywhere. And that space, not space, I keep saying space. I'll focus on one word or idea too much, and I'll repeat that word too many times. But I don't think that that's that uncommon, especially with speakers or anybody who's coming up with something on the fly. So the blood is falling upon the witness, but it falls down the side, and then it ends up getting thrown into the air and it flies off again. You know, I guess what I was trying to say was that my witness doesn't have to be affected by any of the fruits of my wounds that I've inflicted on myself. And so, and behind everything is this intense yellow, like radiant, that I wanted to represent the entirety of whatever I think is behind all this, my like whatever spark that I used to think was solely my own, and that now I can't help. I'm starting to think that whatever this spark is behind everything. And I still don't want to call it God. I really don't want to call it God. Yet, that's a lot what it sounds like, and it's how my subconscious acts towards it. So that radiance behind everything was to, yeah, you get what I'm saying. But it's just, yeah. Anyways, shall we move on? I would like to speak next about self-interest. I know that I mentioned it in the past. I think I have. It's a very popular topic. Hello, feline. You better not be loud like the dog. But is self-interest bad? Is there a difference between self-interest and selfish? Who decides what is selfish? Is there always a victim? Can you be self-interested alone? Does it require a certain degree of self-interest to self-promote and to be able to get some sort of growth? And not to say that we're in this good-bad dichotomy that I'd like to speak more about as well, but why do I feel guilt whenever I do anything for me? And I don't think that is, yet again, I know I've said it a million times throughout this whole show. Most of the things I say, I know I can't speak for other people, but I think that we all share similar enough experiences that I'm determined to relate as much as possible in this lifetime. So I assume that there's somebody out there listening that relates to what I'm saying. At no point can you accomplish anything for yourself without some degree of self-interest. If you had absolutely no self-interest in you, you would be dying in a ditch. If you were all altruism, which altruism is the act of giving, you know, wholeheartedly for the purpose of just bettering somebody for no personal gain or any acclaim. If you were completely an altruistic person with zero hints of self-interest in any molecule of your body, you'd be dead. You would have no food for yourself because you would have given it away. The lifeguard analogy, where you cannot save somebody unless you know how to swim. If you are not taking care of yourself, you have no ability to help others, which is why I'm very timid on this episode, because I know I haven't been taking care of myself. So I'm going to use a lot of I statements, and I'm going to make it very plain that I'm trying to relate, but I'm not talking for you. Why do we use self-interest as a weapon sometimes, where you can weaponize the statement as if you are placing yourself in the role as victim, as to say, you have hurt me, and the reason you have hurt me or not listened to me or neglected to do any insert here is because you, sir or madam, or they, are a selfish person. Well, yes, we're all selfish persons. We're all going through this mental trip trying to disentangle from ourselves, or we're completely attached to that idea of self. What is myself? You know, I've done the me and we episode, which is completely about this idea of self. But tonight I want to go a little bit past me and we and go beyond to nothing and no form, if possible. And that starts with examining how and why we direct our self-interests, because I don't think anybody is completely not self-interested, except for maybe some of the best gurus, maybe Siddhartha, you know, but not anybody I've ever met in my life has any degree of mysticism to have no self-interest. And not to say that those gurus are very helpful either. You know, I feel some of the experiences that have been experienced through some of these situations that you hear about depend a lot on the recipient being opening as well. Recipient to nothing. Where when you see a completely not self-interested man or woman, which I've only read about, I've never met anybody like this in person, but you can only hear about the feeling that it comes from being around some of these people that have attended to beyond that idea of selfdom. You know, but you witness it and you get caught up in it like a whirlpool. It's not like something is instructed upon you, I assume, because I've only read about it. But I've still been touched by some of these experiences, even though I haven't experienced it, which is bizarre to me, that I can be moved in a way that seems to be beyond fantasy or fiction. But that essence of self seems more and more to be a fiction to me. at the least, a very thin illusion or a false paint put over something, such as the black paint that you see put on paintball guns to make them appear lethal, even though they have no capacity to harm anyone except for maybe piss off a cat. So, I was reading earlier, I think it was from a Chuang Tzu excerpt, but I've also seen something very similar put out in many other different types of philosophies throughout all the other branches of the tree of Phi. But form, which Plato's idea of forms, which he had the perfect forms, but not in that essence. In this essence, we're speaking of form and no form, a thing and no thing, which no thing, nothing. Form would be everything that has any sort of extension, which would be the up, down, you know, depth of a 3D object. I would also say it's elasticity in time. It's extension as of weight, density, color, appearance, texture, which is everything that we interact with in the world, where my body's touching this couch right now, and I'm looking at this microphone that has the physical capacity to transmit my vocal patterns into digital currency that is then put through a bizarre subscription fee service that I pay for, and eventually you, my lovely patron, not a patron financially, but a patron for ears, which I could never be any more grateful for than I am. You know, like, all of this apparatus that we are using to interact with each other is a physical object. All of my body's mechanics, the pains and the struggles and the suffers and the pity that I inflict, all these feelings and emotions that inspire thoughts and ideas, even everything that I manipulate in my mind, every single forecasting, every prediction, every hindsight, remembrance, every nostalgic, every single bit of what I use to build a self, a personality, to interact with the world, which again further instills my conviction that I am firmly a part and planted in this world. And if there is a God, I'm part of it in any way. And all of these things, all the things, all the happenings, every single bit of it, everything that you could desire, everything that you want to get away from, all of that is form, the world of things, the thing of things. But is there something outside form that has been spoken about in so many ancient philosophies and religion? A no form. After purgatory, after you've been purged of all your human elements in heaven, or the Brahmanic transcendence, to go back to the impersonal again, to go back to nothing, to get across the stream of nirvana, to leave everything else on the other shore. So when you get there, you join that universal essence, or to go back to Tao. You know, I feel that I've seen flashes. I had a tremendous dimethyl experience a couple weeks back before I moved here, where she revealed a very beautiful sight to me. And it was a really hard day. And I asked for help, and she gave it to me very, very efficiently. And I saw, I experienced everything fall away, all my dread, and there was nothing for a little bit, you know. And it was very kind and nice. And when I came out of it, I wasn't even sad. I had this feeling that it was a gift. And that, if anything, I'm not rushing death. I'm not. I can't. I have a son. I have too many responsibilities and loves in life. And I have too many seeds of creation that I'm going to stick around and make as much as I can. I'm going to try to help as many people as I can. And my bodhisattva, I don't think that's the right word. You know, I want to, I would never try to, but I'm not afraid of death neither. And I really think that's what that experience is related to, is that there is something very beautiful behind us, behind the physical intellect that we have to use every day and that we wake up with. And that every time we take deep breaths and step out for a second and make self-interested choices that help others, I don't know. But with no form comes no action. Non-ado. Which is something that I have been reading about for a long time, because for me, it's one of the crucial things that I've dragged out of any Taoist text, from Chuang Tzu to Lao Tzu to a lot of other things as well, is this idea of let it be and bide. And I've been trying to force things too much. I've had high expectations for how I was going to take care of this crisis. And honestly, what I've had to do was just sit tight and let people take care of me and make decisions for me, almost. And my pride fought, because I didn't want to feel like a child. Yet, non-action is part of growing and learning and gaining wisdom. I read this really interesting, perhaps I'll find it, because chapter 70-something from the Tao Te Ching. A very short chapter, but I liked it. Yep, I think I probably read it before. Verse 71. Knowing not knowing is best. Not knowing not knowing is a flaw. The wise are not flawed, because they recognize a flaw is a flaw. Hence, they are without flaw. Then there's this beautiful calligraphy right underneath it of the writing for knowing. But so there's knowing, and then there's not knowing, which is always hyphenated, and then there's not knowing. So there's a difference between knowing and not knowing, just like there's a difference between nothing and thing. And so knowing is knowledge, something that we have, that we've gained out of material. Not knowing is something that is always present, and I think it's linked to that essence that I feel I'm speaking of, because behind the material is this essence of something that is ungraspable and something that we can't even comprehend, yet is supremely beautiful. And I think it is the essence of what we draw from for creative, implement, and compassionate acts. And I think it's not just human. I think it's showed throughout all of nature. And I think you see it in immaterial objects in the way that seasons work. There's compassion everywhere. And it's almost like the world is an entity that we're a part of, that I feel, that I'm starting to feel. But the not knowing is the crucial part. And the first couple times I went through this verse, it was really confusing, and I was mainly focused on ignorance. But now I think not knowing is something beyond ignorance, and it might even be the goal of getting to something that's ungraspable when you can't even describe it or categorize or organize it or destroy it, you know, in all these reasonable acts, you know. So knowing not knowing is best. So knowing, like having knowledge of something that's ungraspable and accepting the ungraspable is best. So not knowing, so that's not hyphenated. So not having knowledge of not knowing, which is hyphenated. So not knowing, not knowing, I know it's kind of confusing, is a flaw. So that's not having any knowledge of ungraspable, which would be, I feel, people who have complete conviction of themselves. And it's a way that I come across as, especially when I'm fucked up, because I can't help, I can't accept help or listen well when I'm not okay. And so... I think I have the answer, but I don't allow anybody else to try to give me the answer either, because I've decided I'm doomed. And that's its own essence of what this line is saying. So not knowing, not knowing, right? Not having any knowledge of what's ungraspable is complete conviction that you know everything. And it could also be complete ignorance as well. Maybe, I hope that's not too obscure, but I wanted to speak about it. And then Chuang Tzu, might as well do a little bit of Chuang Tzu. I hope you don't mind all this Tao stuff. We'll do something different soon, I promise. I will, next week, we'll do something really different. I will read you some quotes from maybe a science textbook. We'll do that. That sounds really different. But I've been really enjoying Chuang Tzu. Zhuangzi, I've also heard his name. When the shoe fits. Chui the draftsman could draw more perfect circles freehand than with a compass. His fingers brought forth spontaneous forms from nowhere. His mind was meanwhile free and without concern with what he was doing. No application was needed. His mind was perfectly simple and knew no obstacle. So when the shoe fits, the foot is forgotten. When the belt fits, the belly is forgotten. When the heart is right, for and against are forgotten. No drives, no compulsions, no needs, no attractions. Then your affairs are under control. You are a free man. Easy is right, begin right, and you are easy. Continue easy, and you are right. The right way to go easy is to forget the right way and to forget that the going is easy. So... He hits me hard. He's good. You should look up Chuang Tzu or Zhuangzi, however you look it up. It's a Chuang Tzu. Yeah, so what about the fit of life? So if the shoe fits, you don't feel the shoe. So if you have a shitty shoe and your shoe's not fitting right, you feel your bruises. You feel your feet. Your feet has thought. Your foot has an opinion because it's not comfortable, I guess. But so when you have a perfectly fitting shoe, and or if you're barefoot and you're comfy, you don't even think about your feet. You're not even knowledgeable of it. When your hand doesn't hurt, you don't think about your hands. You just use them. You know, my finger's been numb for like a couple of days. It's fucking weird. I guess I'm okay. But like when you don't have any issues with a body part, you never think about it. As soon as you get a tiny cut on your finger, you're going to be thinking about your hand a shit ton, you know? And so that's kind of the idea. And I started having these really weird introspections about the fit of life. Like, what about my fit in life? Because I think I had this mistaken idea that in one of my comfortable zones, life was just really snug and fitty. Maybe that was really snug and fitty life. But if I think I am intrinsically part of the world, then that means that my essence is intrinsically part of life as well. And that means that in order for life to fit, I have to make myself the right size. And that's kind of like an acceptance into that nothing, into that. Yeah, it's like I don't know if that makes any sense. But yeah. So Tree the Draftsman, pretty smart guy. Here's another good one. The Wood Carver. King, the master carver, made a bell stand of precious wood. When it was finished, all who saw it were astounded. They say it must be the work of spirits. The Prince of Lu said to the master carver, "What is your secret?" King replied, "I am only a workman. I have no secret. There is only this. When I began to think about the work you commanded, I guarded my spirit, did not expend it on trifles that were not the point. I fasted in order to set my heart at rest. After 3 days fasting, I had forgotten gain and success. After 5 days, I had forgotten praise or criticism. After 7 days, I had forgotten my body with all of its limbs. By this time, all thought of your highness and of the court had faded away, and that might distract me from the work had vanished. I was collected in a single thought of the bell stand. Then I went to the forest to see the trees in their own natural state. When the right tree appeared before my eyes, the bell stand also appeared in it clearly, beyond a doubt. All I had to do was to put forth my hand and begin. If I had not met this particular tree, there would have been no bell stand at all. What happened? My own collected thought encountered the hidden potential in the wood. From this live encounter came the work which you ascribe to the spirits." Shabow. So, this one hits me a little differently tonight. I thought I had a good one on this one. So, all of the pressures over the task, the authority of the prince, all of the pressure that he could have, his anxiety over making it, even his attachments to everything else in life, such as to food and to everything else, were in the way of making the best product, which was a bell stand in this case. And so, in order for him to make the best bell stand he could, he had to completely drop all of his attachments to it and all of his outward pressures acting according to him. He had to become a no-self. And then once in that state of mind, all he had to go out and do is find the tree, and within the tree always was a bell stand, and he just had to make it happen. But all of the other attachments would have brought him into his body, and he couldn't have seen it from the tree's point of view. Maybe, I don't know. If you have any opinions on these, I would really like it if you would like to have a conversation about it. I have a ridiculously long email address that will be hot keyed in the comment section of this podcast on whatever podcast player you're on. Hopefully you can find it. Just click it and we can have a conversation. It is the Gingerbread Man's Dialogues. That's the Gingerbread Man's Dialogues, plural. So please hit me up and let's have a conversation. If you have your own interpretation of what I just read to you, or if you want to look it up, this is Chuang Tzu's The Woodcarver from Thomas Merton's collection that he did. Thomas Merton was a Christian mystic, I believe, and super cool to see this. I don't think he was a translator. I think he just compiled it. So this is the last one I'll do tonight because I don't want to read too much. It'd be really good to get just feedback, period, on what you'd like to hear more of, or if you don't like some stuff. Because I know I did like cheesy advertisements that I didn't like, but if you like them, I'll bring them back. Yeah, I would like more feedback. It'd be cool. to make some cool shit happen. But the fighting cock, and not of the penile variety. Qi Hung Tzu was a trainer of fighting cocks. But just imagine if it was just a bunch of like rogue penises just fighting like in a ring, like just people throwing just like penises at each other. Sorry. So Qing Swing Zhu was a trainer of fighting cocks. For King Huan, he was a training a fighting bird. The king kept asking if the birds were ready for combat. "Not yet," said the trainer. "He is full of fire. He is ready to pick a fight with every other bird. He is vain and confident of his own strength." After 10 days, he answered again. "Not yet." He flares up when he hears another bird crow. After 10 more days. "Not yet." He still gets the angry look and ruffles his feathers. Again, after 10 days, the trainer said. "Now he is nearly ready. When another bird crows, his eyes do not even flicker. He stands immobile like a cock of wood." He is a mature fighter. Other birds will take one look at him and run. I wonder if the double entendre translates at all. I don't think it does. It can't. That can't be the same in any way, shape, or form. This has to be just a coincidence of gold. Fucking cocks of wood. So, like, I relate to this one a lot. Like, the Tao Te Ching says a lot about, I read earlier about how it's better to be soft than it is to be hard. Like, everything in life, when it's alive, is soft and supple. Even if it's strong and has muscles, it's usually soft. Like, even trees bend in the wind. But when a tree dies, it becomes very hard and brittle, and it just cracks and breaks, and you have to be very careful to shape it. Like, so the roosters in this situation that are being fought against each other, yeah, I relate to it a lot. I'm going to try to hold that image in my head every time I want to get angry. Like, and I don't know, I'm not trying to fight my kid, which is so weird. It's such a stupid anger that you have towards children. But like, I have gotten mad at work and stuff, and I haven't gotten it in a while. I haven't even got really mad at anybody at the work. Just like had some stupid situations. But I used to get mad when I was younger at people directly at work, where I was like, "You're a fucking asshole," you know, like. But every time now that happens, I want to think of fighting penises and think of the roosters that weren't ready until they were cool as cucumbers. Anyway, yeah, where to end this one? I don't know. Nothing, no form. Imagine putting together a blank puzzle, 1,000-piece puzzle that's just a whole bunch of white pieces. I think it would suck ass, and it fills me with anxiety, and I think it's an excellent metaphor for life. Let's see. I really like my manual transmission on my car still. A lot. All right, I'm just rambling. I'm going to pass you on to my wonderful child. This is my favorite segment, Ask O. And after that, we will say goodbye to you guys.
One, two, three, go.
Say hi.
Hi. Well, my question is today,
You want me to ask it?
I'm gonna ask it. So the question for today for me is going to be nothing.
Nothing?
Yeah.
What is nothing?
So, if you're sitting in a boring room with no toys and stuff, it's kind of like nothing.
Nothing.
Sometimes people like to enjoy it because they're still have beds.
Okay, you got
to
stop jumping around or else you're going to mess up the audio because everybody can hear that. So you got to sit calm and still. Okay?
Yep.
Can you sit down, please? Okay, let's start over.
No, don't start
okay,
over.
Then listen, please.
So, I already asked the question now. So, I'm going to say bye.
So what does nothing mean, other than just what you have to do?
You can...
What about when it doesn't concern what we have to do?
It could be boring.
Is there a positive to nothing?
Yes, it's a positive to nothing.
When you have a headache and it goes away, doesn't that feel good?
Yes. Yep. Oh.
See, that's really loud.
Oh,
this is all the things I'm asking you not to do, buddy.
Sorry.
Can you put it down, please?
Yes.
Okay. How was your week? Want to talk about it? You had a pretty good day today.
Yeah, I had a good day today. I stayed busy. Don't stop, please. So, before I go, I want to just tell you, babe, hey, it was my day. I had a good day. Okay.
You sound like Forrest Gump.
Okay.
Okay.
So, bye. Okay. Bye.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for your time, kid.
Yay.
I love you.